Welcome, everybody, to the Lonely TARDIS, your journey through space and time, lords. The pre-Christmas special. We're going to have a kind of a shorter episode. Well, we always say shorter. We always end up running long. A fun episode, let's say, focused on the Christmas specials of yore. So we'll chat a little bit about those. And I'm talking about Doctor Who, of course. We are only three companions today. But yeah, we're going to talk about the Christmas specials of yore and maybe briefly touch on the upcoming Christmas special. And we'll rank our personal favorites. So with that said, I am Dolly Domovsky. Joining me, as usual, Marcus Beer.
Hello.
And Steven Strum.
Hi. Did I miss something, or did you say that 100% certainty that Sean wasn't going to be here? Because last time I heard, he just said he wasn't sure.
Nope. Now he is definitely, yeah, and Sean Norton is definitely not going to be joining us. He is flying, moments away from flying, so he's unable to with the holiday travel and so on.
Couldn't even Skype in from the airport.
What a bastard. But
can we just go ahead and demote him to part-timer now?
Yeah. It's been a while coming. Like, he's just been so bad about getting onto episodes, you know.
Mm-mm.
He's going to be so mad at me when he listens to this episode if I say that without, like, following it up. So I'm going to say that's not true at all.
Okay.
Sean's great.
All right. Well, I will say, let's kick it right off. So we're going to kind of go through each individual Christmas special. I'll read a quick little intro to it, and then we will, give our thoughts, and at the end we'll talk about which ones we like the most. I guess that's probably the easiest way to do it. So, and this is New Who, of course. One of the really nice things, by the way, that BBC America has is the they have all the Christmas specials up right now on BBCAmerica.com. So if you go to Doctor Who, you can watch every single Christmas special online. That's actually how I've been able to catch up. I marathon the Christmas specials from Friday onward, and I probably watched 3 to 4 a day. So that was pretty good. It was a fun time to rewatch all those, because there's so much history and so many characters have changed. So let's dive into the very first one of New Who, which was the Christmas Invasion. And this was David Tennant. Here's the summary. Christmas becomes a time of terror for planet Earth as the whole of mankind falls under the shadow of the alien Sycorax. Rose needs the doctor's help, but can she trust a man with a new face? So this was right after the 10th or the 9th doctor regenerated into the 10th doctor, or Christopher Eccleston into David Tennant's doctor. This is Tennant's first story. He comes out of the TARDIS groggy and kind of fumbling around and kind of collapses, right? And Rose and her mom and good old Mickey are left fending for themselves and trying to save Earth, at least for the good first chunk of this episode, from the evil alien Sycorax. So initial thoughts of this? I mean, this was Tennant's... essentially Tennant's debut. And we didn't really get him until the towards the end of the episode.
Yeah, I this is the one that I watched before coming back onto this, because it was one I felt like I probably needed to remember the most.
Sure.
It's interesting. What was actually interesting to me is realizing that the first two Christmas specials were kind of so important. They kind of introduced like my favorite doctor and, you know, a lot of people's favorite doctor, and then the second one after that introduced my favorite companion and a lot of people's favorite companion,
right?
In Donna Noble. And you compare that to, like, you know, where the Christmas, and we'll get into this later, I'm sure, but where the Christmas specials eventually went, and it's just like, here's this vaguely Christmassy episode that is kind of doesn't have that much bearing on the overall narrative. Whereas before, I felt like at this time, I felt like the Christmas specials were kind of an event. Like, you care that it was a Christmas special and it wasn't just episode 14 of the season. But the episode itself is, you know, it's a good introduction for David Tennant. Like, they literally, like, he's barely in the episode, which gives Rose a lot of time to kind of work around, and we get to see a little bit more of Mickey and Jackie kind of interacting and all this stuff. So, you know, it gives us time to want to see David Tennant and see what he's going to be like. And then when he does show up, Russell T. Davies just knocks it out of the park with, like, the scene, the big nightly fight scene and everything like that, and David Tennant mm-hmm. saying, like, what kind of man am I? I don't know! And all that stuff, and then, like, no second chances with the Satsuma, and, you know, we get, like, they build it up, and they build it up, and they build it up, and then they get through extrapolating what this character is within, like, 15 minutes by the very end of the episode, and it's great.
Yeah, and this also led to the whole doctor getting his hand cut off aspect, right? So he had just come out of, he's still kind of in regeneration sickness, and gets his hand chopped off, but it's okay because in the first 15 hours of his regen cycle, grows his hand back. But I think a lot of times people considered, or a lot of conversation had people considering that as almost a mini regeneration, right?
Mm-hmm.
I wholeheartedly agree with you. I don't consider this a great episode by any means. It's a good episode. It's watchable.
The plot itself is not the Sycorax are not great villains. Exactly. Even Santa Pilot Fish are goofy as fuck.
But you get to find out who David Tennant is as a doctor and what his doctor's all about. I mean, he is a little bit. He's kind of, I don't want to say all knowing, but he's wiser. Or wilier, I should say. Wilier, he's a little more daring than Eccleston, or than the Ninth Doctor. I think he's definitely a different Doctor. He's got a lot more energy, and you see it. He's able to kind of talk his way out of a couple situations in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was very interesting. What are your thoughts, Marcus?
Okay, so first up. I missed half your conversation because I'm definitely into it. So what I will say is this is in my top three.
Oh, wow.
I'll tell you.
Even with Rose?
I happen to think that Russell T. Davies did the better Christmas specials than Moffat has, because again, Christmas you can be a little bit more schmaltzy, you can be a little bit more fun. The beauty of this one was this was the beginning of the sort of like, you know, the kitchen sink aspect that I talked about last week that then became, unfortunately, you know, ad nauseum repeat over and over again during Russell T. Davies's turn. But the fact that he, you know, the Doctor is out for the count, the fact that he is he's not in it till the very end. And then all of a sudden, that last sort of like 20 minutes, half, or whatever it is that he's actually in, he just blows it out the water. I mean, you know, that's when the TARDIS doors open on the Sycorax ship and he is out there and he's there in his pajamas and his dressing gown and, you know, it was all it needed was a cup of tea. I think, you know, that was... That set the tone for Tennant's run, mm-hmm. Which, you know, as Stephen said, you know, a lot of people's favorite Doctor, and certainly, you know, again, he's in my top three. So, you know, it was important because it did kick off a lot of potential storylines that were actually followed through, unlike, you know, which is something we can't really say nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
The Hand. To be, you know, the Dr. Donna, Harriet, was it Harriet Jones? Exactly. The fact that, you know, we saw this doctor doing a fight, way up in the middle of anywhere, you know, the blood magic speech, the bit at the end as the Sycorax were leaving and the, Torchwood was mentioned. And they fired the weapon, and then the doctor turned, and with just one whisper, brought down Harriet Jones.
Yeah, that was pretty amazing.
I need to remember not to try and interact with Marcus and just let him talk on this episode because the lag between us is so crazy.
I'm so sorry.
Oh, I'm sure we'll muddle through it. All I was going to say was I found the characterization of Harriet Jones a little bit strange, just only because they sort of like they set her up very quickly to like, I'm going to stand up against the U.S. government, and she says like, you know, I'm not going to let the president of the United States turn this into a war. And then she instantly attacks the Sycorax and kills them the moment she has the chance. That was a little bit strange.
Yeah, I mean, it is. I mean, it's very British. I mean, that's the quintessential beauty of the Christmas specials on the whole. When they're set on Earth, they are quintessentially British, and you have these, you know, flip-flopping little politicians. I mean, again, this was coming to the end of the Tony Blair era in the UK. You know, there's obviously Russell T. Davis is a bit of a militant, a bit of a socialist, like all good Welshmen. So it's a little bit, you know, there's a little bit of political commentary in there as well. It's not very subtle. But yeah, it's sort of a lot comes up. I mean, for the first Christmas special, having introduced a new doctor and all those different timelines, you know, the Christmas trees, that made me laugh. And again, this was back when the Doctor Who budget was still not impressive.
It's starting to lose you a little bit more here, too, Marcus.
That's right. We can we'll move on. That first one.
Can you pause it and dial me back in about 3 minutes? I'm just gonna reset
that's
it.
That's fine. Yep. Why don't you go out and then we'll get you reset it. Yeah.
I didn't mean to cut him off or anything like that. I just wanted to. We don't record these things locally, so I wanted to make sure that the listeners at home can hear it too.
Yeah. but no, you know, they're. I think both. You guys make great points, and it's rewatching it was interesting to me because I did not. Looking back now, I did not like Rose at all. Maybe even back then when I first started watching it, wasn't a fan of hers, and I think what made it worse was her mother being just sappy all over the doctor, you know, and so it was. I don't think it was necessarily acted very well from the Rose and kind of the non-doctor actors, but it was so important. And I felt that does need some, you know, I feel like it always needs some significance in there. So, but it was a full story. At least we had a full story from beginning to end. And you know, even though we were kind of stuck with the characters that we had to deal with, it's at least provided us a compelling, you know, this doctor came in as a hero at the end with a freaking sword fight, loses his hand, Jedi style. I'll leave that up for people to watch.
Right, after this was all done, the hand got found and turned into a clone called the Dukedur, and it gave him his old lightsaber.
Yep, his own lightsaber, and he also became the Dukedur, or as we call him, the D-1000. Okay, that is the Christmas Invasion. Next on the list of Doctor Who specials is The Runaway Bride. And I think this is a favorite of a lot of folks. So I'm going to read the synopsis of Runaway Bride, and then we can kind of go over that. I mean, it's simple. It's a young woman is transported to TARDIS on her wedding day. So this is the first Donna Noble story. They threw her right into the Christmas specials, right into Doctor Who with this Christmas special. And you never knew that she was going to come back, although you had this feeling after this episode. She compelled people really well to engage people really well, I should say, throughout this episode. And she was really compelling as a character of this bride who, kind of the way she told the story, I ended up rewatching this one today, actually. The way she tells the story of how her and her fiance meet, and she keeps saying things like, oh man, he was all over me and he was pushing and pushing to marry me. And I kept having to fight him off, and it was, you know, vignette to a scene of him trying to get away from her as she's kind of forcing him to marry her, was really cool. So yeah, that is The Runaway Bride, our very first Donna Noble story. And it's a fun story. I mean, it's got Christmas trees that rotate and shoot out, ornaments that explode, I guess. The only thing that I necessarily didn't love was that, yet again, and this was very much a Doctor Who, a new Who thing, and maybe it was an old Who, I'm not sure, but those same, you get these statue robots, you know, that whether they're made out of plastic or they're full on metal or they appear to be people playing instruments. They're like the same idea, the same type of creation, right? This automaton idea. And that's the one thing I thought, here we go. Yet another automaton story. And it ended up being that, but at least they were neatly designed and kind of a lot more terrifying than the previous automaton story. Automaton. Yeah, whatever. Okay. What are you guys' thoughts? Runaway Bride, Donna Noble's first foray into Doctor Who.
I hate Donna Noble the first time I saw her.
Oh, really?
I hated Donna Noble. Mm. She was every mouthy London bird I'd ever worked with who, you know, had this gift for revisionist history.
Yes.
That was so irksome and, you know, so mouthy, thinking, you know, basically jack of all trades, master of none. No, you know, I'm the smartest, but, you know, I'm super smart. I know this, I know that. And you can't tell me anything when, you know, dull as ditch water. But I still love this Christmas special. And again, yeah, I get where you're going with, you know, the intergalactic silverfish Santas being, you know, recruited again. And, you know, the fact that somebody gets married on Christmas Day. I mean, how miserable is that? I mean,
Good luck trying to find a reception hall and a band that wants to play on that day and caterers that want to deliver on Christmas.
Yeah. But still, I mean, it's one of my favorites because, again, you know, Tennant has now hit full stride. He's just, you know, he's recovered from one of the greatest moments in Doctor Who where, what's her name's gone? Rose. So Rose. He is, you know, it's just, I mean, it is, you know, it's a cool little plot. Yeah. You know, the fact you go back to the very beginning of the Earth and the big ship is part, you know, is wrapped up and, yeah, that's cheesy, but it's just enjoyable story. So yeah, I liked it.
You liked it. Stephen, what are your thoughts on this episode?
Yeah, I like it a lot. I mean, Mark is pointing out the stuff about like Donna Noble being like so easily hateable, and that's kind of the point. And I obviously, I'm sure that becomes obvious over time, but like we had no idea that that was going to be the point at the time. She was just a super annoying character that we knew nothing about except that she was annoying and that she was kind of like a not especially great person a lot of the time. And this is one of the rare instances, and I've talked in depth about how I feel about special guests on episodes of Doctor Who before, and them not really mattering. But this is one instance where that actually played really well into their favor because we got Catherine Tate. She was a name. She had her own show. She was a known comedian in Britain, especially at the time. So like it made sense to bring her on for a single episode because she was a guest actor. And then when she returns for the fourth season, like it's more of a surprise and it's more of a, you know, an important feeling because like, oh, they brought back that character that you never expected to see again because they were just a guest star. So, and then this episode suddenly, like retroactively, becomes about setting up that character for so much growth over time and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You know, like it reframes this entire, like the fourth season reframes this entire episode and her entire character. And, you know, you understand how important it is, all the experience that she's had with the Doctor by the end of season four are because you knew her at that time.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And you knew her a while ago. And then it makes that ending so much more tragic. And they, like, this is something we get mad about at Moffat. Like, they gave that idea time to breathe. We got an entire season without this character, without knowing what she was doing or, you know, even that she was coming back. And then suddenly there she is. And, you know, that season four finale is one of probably the most tragic stories in all of Doctor Who because of it, I think. And mm-hmm. that all begins in The Runaway Bride.
Yeah, and I was happy as a fan that they brought, you know, they revisited her character years later or later on as a full-on companion. I think she had fit the bill. So, yeah, that was a very good Christmas special, The Runaway Bride. Up next, Voyage of the Damned. And this episode is kind of interesting in that it may be the the first of New Who that is its own separate little story. So it's Christmas Eve, and a spaceship, the Titanic, is transporting Voyagers who want to kind of see what, they're going around planets and seeing lesser life forms, and hey, look, let's go to Earth and visit humans. And it just happens to be Christmas Day, and the doctor shows up on the ship, and so on and so forth. The plot was interesting, but again, freaking automatons. Okay, mm-hmm. I'm sick of them. And then the whole idea of this whole thing basically being a an insurance scam by Max Capricorn, the guy who runs the whole cruise line as kind of his own, set up his retirement fund, I guess, just felt kind of dull. Again, if it's a singular episode, you never need to watch this episode ever to get any Doctor Who continuity. But I guess maybe as a one-off, it's fine. Maybe for that aspect. I don't know. What are your guys' thoughts? I do think they cast Kylie Minogue strictly to get viewers, because this was the – I think I read somewhere that it was like the highest-rated episode in Who history until later on, until like 7 or 8 months later. So it was a pretty big episode. I think that had to do with casting her, because she was basically at her second or third peak in popularity as kind of a stage and screen icon. So I don't know, what are your thoughts about Voyage of the Damned?
I mean, you say it's not that, it doesn't, it's a standalone adventure. It doesn't really carry over a ton of important lore or anything like that further on, but it is a good episode. It's the Poseidon adventure, it's what Doctor Who does a lot, which is to take real life or, other fiction and kind of put some weird British-y spin on it and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I think that this episode does it very well. The Doctor in a disaster movie is, was a pretty strong idea. I had something very specific I wanted to say about this episode. Max Capricorn. I've been saying it since Dinosaurs on a Spaceship, but we need more single villains, singular villains. And Max Capricorn definitely felt like that to me. I loved his weedy little John Waters mustache and his annoying ass voice, just constantly making him a presence in the episode. And again, we talk about Donna Noble being annoying and stuff like that in her first episode. They keep this character in the back of your mind throughout the entire episode, but that's sort of voice, that Waluigi voice of his.
Twirl that mustache.
He's so annoying. He's perfect. And then when he shows up, he's just this little head in a jar on the loader from Aliens. And you want to see that guy get his face pushed in, and of course it does happen at the end, so it gives you exactly what you want. So then in all those respects, I think this is just it's a fine episode. It had one of those classic things that you saw in the Russell T. Davies era that don't really exist anymore in the Stephen Moffat era, which is like the let's end a season with not a cliffhanger, but this weird, crazy, ridiculous thing that's going to happen out of the blue, Catherine Tate showing up on the TARDIS, or the Titanic smashing into the side of the TARDIS, that sort of thing. Those were always fun. And again, did a lot to kind of create continuity between the Christmas specials and the rest of the season in a way that I don't think Moffat has necessarily done, which I don't necessarily think that's inherently bad. I think you can do whatever you want. You can have them stand apart as different things. It's just a small little detail that I happened to like at the time.
Sure. What about you, Marcus?
This one, I mean, plot holes apart. Love that, love Kylie Minogue, love the spin on, Earth and the guy who was the Earth history expert, Mr. Copper, and how he got everything totally backwards. The whole, it was the Poseidon adventure aspect. Yeah. And that worked. I mean, it was great. I mean, yes, was it cheesy? Yes. But did it give us Crewman Alonso? Absolutely, who was also kind of great. He came back briefly at the end of Tennant's run. Kylie Minogue, great. The fact that she did was a really good good way to pull it off. So we didn't have any more too much schmaltzy. again, one of the greatest Tennant speeches ever. When it's, you know, he's asked who he is, he's like, "I'm the Doctor. I'm from Gallifrey in the constellation of Castorberus. I'm 900 years old," and blah 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 blah. And any questions? And that was, you know, that was again Tennant in chess, which I think, you know, tended to coincide with some of the, you know, with the Christmas specials. There was a, you know, the some of the strongest. He had some of the strongest little soliloquies or is. So yeah, this one for me has been a, you know, this one, this is my favorite. It's my favorite Christmas special. Yeah, it is my favorite Christmas special. It's, you know, hit at the right time for me. I mean, you know, he was back, Doctor Who was back, you know, and had a couple of years to run into it. We were midway through the Tennant run. Well, almost actually. No, he is literally midway through the Tennant.
Yeah, yep.
It was more set of specials than him, and I saw everything clicked, and you know that one you can just take with large grains of salt, and it was unapologetically cheesy.
Yeah,
you know, when you see the Queen trying to get out in her slippers and waving as the Doctor pulls the Titanic up over Buckingham Palace. And again, this, the events in this had a knock-on effect later on in the next season with Turn Left. You know, where the Doctor wasn't there to save the Earth, and the Titanic did go down, and Max Capricorn, you know, got away with it because the Doctor wasn't there, and then all of a sudden half of England's irradiated and nobody can go there. So yeah, it was, you know, it was a good struggle. I mean, you saw the ship captain. I mean, he was dying and he took the payoff, and you know, the
for his family, right? He mentioned it was the money for his family. Yep,
magnetizing the hull to attract the meteors, the angels. I mean, yeah, again, the incredibly creepy, you know.
And kind of a exactly. Kind of a creeper, precursor to the Blink, I guess you could say, with the angels, the weeping angels that we love so much.
The weeping angels would have been first, wouldn't they have been?
Was that weeping? Were they weeping angels before this one?
End of season two. So yeah, this would have been the end of season three, and then Blink was also season three. So yeah.
Okay. All right.
I was going to the thing I was trying to remember earlier. I did just remember it, and I think Marcus kind of touched on it a little bit, which is that, like, if you're talking about like bringing the Christmas episodes down to earth and then like making them like unabashedly British and everything like that, which they definitely did in the first couple of seasons. This one actually touches on a couple of things that have always seemed like quintessentially British to me, which is, I remember at the time there was some sort of controversy about like the Christian imagery of like the Doctor being raised up by the angels like Jesus or something like that at the end of the episode. And it made me wonder about this sort of like weird thing that I've always kind of noticed in fiction, that gets referenced in British fiction sometimes and just kind of mentioned offhandedly, which is like this sort of connection between Santa Claus and Jesus and all this stuff, and like the tendency of like British culture to mythologize its heroes into like almost religious icons, and kind of doing that to the Doctor in this episode, like whether it was intentional or not, having like the angels raise the Doctor up and everything like that is definitely an interesting moment and interesting visual.
And in this episode also, I mean, you had Astrid, who was essentially his companion throughout this episode, I guess you could call her. But she dies. She actually dies in this episode and becomes this little rays of light, I guess, and flies out. I mean, that was her dream, was to always travel among the stars. And the only way she could really do that was to perish, I guess. So.
And isn't that just David Tennant as hell? Like, David Tennant, Doctor, it's like one single person dies in this, you know, many, many people die, and he does his best.
Actually, everybody dies except for like four people total.
Except for like one, like Alonzo and the old man, the
keeping Mr. up. Copper, Alonzo, and Rixton Slade.
But like, the survivors, and like he does what he can for everybody. He tries to get all of the survivors out and he tries to help them, and then he gives that he gives Alonzo his happy ending, and he gives Keeping Up Appearances Man his happy ending. I'm terrible for not knowing. He literally just said his character's name 4 seconds ago. I'm awful. But
Mr. Copper,
he gives him his happy ending, and even
Every time you say he gives him
you know what? Well, in hey, to be fair, in Alonzo's case, he did send him to Captain Jack, so let's be fair. But you know, he gives everybody, you know, what they're happily ever after. Is that better? He gives them what he can. He does what he can for them. Even a person who has already died.
Yeah. Yeah.
He sends her out into the stars and helps her fulfill her dream after death. And that, you know, I think it is because like so much of what I associate with the Doctor is David Tennant's run of the Doctor. And that is such a quintessentially David Tennant thing to do that I have so many problems with Peter Capaldi, you know, from episode to episode, you know, not caring about people who live or die, not giving a shit about anyone who isn't directly important to him. That is just always like David Tennant. It's David Tennant's fault. He made this compassionate.
He couldn't save everybody.
Yeah. He made this compassionate, empathetic doctor that I loved so much and just salted the earth for anything else to come afterwards. And, you know, Matt Smith had those sort of moments too. Matt Smith had kind of a harder edge to him sometimes, but, you know, Matt Smith was approaching Peter Capaldi in a lot of his sort of, like for trying to, he's the doctor who forgets type stuff, you know, but David Tennant and episodes like Voyage of the Damned kind of established the first part of that three arc or of that three act trilogy.
Sure. Well, unfortunately Marcus's ISP, his network is just crapped out. So we're going to be missing Marcus the rest of this episode. On the bright side, our connection is much clearer now, surprisingly.
Yeah, you sound well. Yeah, that's always the case. Whenever Marcus ducks out, I hear you so much better.
I think it's the a two-way call on Hangout. Google Hangout is a lot easier to take in than any. The minute you start adding anybody else, the call tends to degrade.
One of these days, we should actually start just recording these locally if we ever want to take it to the next step.
That next step. But that's Inside Baseball. Voyage of the Damned. Okay, next on the list is The Next Doctor. The Next Doctor, it's Christmas Eve, 1851. Cybermen are in London, and David Tennant, Doctor number 10, bumps into somebody claiming to be the Doctor, you know, from with a TARDIS, with a sonic screwdriver from Gallifrey, an alien on Earth. And we come to find out he's not necessarily the Doctor. He just kind of inherited some of the Doctor's memories, and I think that's what it was, right? He's still played by David Morrissey, right? David Morrissey, is that his name? So this was
We don't have Marcus here. I don't know these things. What are you asking for?
Right. I'm pulling up the wiki page right now as we speak. It was Morrissey. So who went on to become the governor on The Walking Dead? Just a little tidbit.
I did not keep up with that show, so I had no idea.
Yeah. This is my favorite Christmas episode.
Really?
Just tons of fun. I didn't realize Morrissey was the governor 2 years later, but I really enjoyed this episode because even the Doctor was kind of confused early on that, hey, you know, you're me. Apparently you're a future regeneration of me. And then David Morrissey's Doctor, just the Doctor, didn't know how to respond to him. So I couldn't remember. His memory was kind of wiped, I guess, at one point. But a very cool episode. It's Christmas time. It's it was just overall a ton of fun. I mean, this one had like the giant Cybermen, the Cybermen head or something at the end. I can't remember quite what it was. There was something ginormous. The Cyber King. That's right. The Cyber King. I really like this episode. And speaking of Cybermen, this had the coolest looking Cybermen designs, because there was the one that had like the glass head that you can actually see the human brain through.
Cyber Commander, is that what?
Yeah, maybe that's what it was. This is the best Cybermen design by far. And it had like the kind of like the, it was silver and had the black face mask. So it was really nicely designed, everything in this episode. So yeah, I enjoyed this. And I mean, I think the line that still sticks to me to this day is that the doctor, David Morrissey's Doctor and the real Doctor, Tennant's Doctor, are hanging out in a warehouse, kind of figuring things out. And Tennant says, so that's your sonic screwdriver, right? And he holds up an actual screwdriver. And David Morrissey says, yeah. So he goes, well, how's the sonic screwdriver? And he taps it against the wall. I go, see, it makes a sound. Like, that's brilliant. That's just, it's just, it's a Tennant-ism era, you know, comment. And it just a fun episode. He had Rosita, David Morrissey's doctor, had Rosita as his companion. The TARDIS was not the TARDIS that we actually know of. I think it was overall, it was just a lot of fun. It was a singular episode, but it did kind of make the doctor start to reevaluate and start to think about his future a little bit. So I enjoyed it. And I think this is my favorite. We're not going to rewatch this one a few more times. I might end up rewatching it again, even though I just watched it maybe earlier today. I might watch it again tomorrow because I enjoyed it that much. What about you? What were your thoughts about this episode?
I've never really had much feeling on this episode to speak of. To me, it's kind of where they start to get a little bit goofy with the Cybermen over design a little bit. Like, you know, the cyber leader of whatever it was, the cyber commander, yeah, controller, whatever, that black face mask design is definitely cool. You know, in a goofy old timey way and stuff like that. But then you have the weird Cyberman dogs and the Cyber King Dreadnought, who is like the Cybermen built a spaceship that is shaped like a Cyberman. Which Like, and then a concept which is then not held up in like season 6 when they go to a Cyberman fleet and then there's all the Cybermen are in very different ships. It just goofy as hell, that stuff. And that was kind of when the Cybermen, I started to feel a little bit tired to me, is like they just felt over-designed and overly elaborate and overly weird. But for the rest of the episode, like all the character driven stuff with the false doctor and everything like that, that was definitely fun.
Yeah.
Like him searching for different ways to kind of to reconcile his identity as the doctor with his world that obviously wouldn't work with David Tennant's memories and stuff like that. And David Tennant had to lose Donna Noble not too long ago, like had to sit there and kind of like see what was going on, and had to basically revisit shattering someone's, you know, life and what they thought of themselves all over again. And, you know, that having that, you know, connecting the end of the previous season to then what was going to happen at the end of this season, which is the David Tennant dying with Donna Noble's grandfather and everything like that. Like all that stuff was very interesting. You know, it's foreshadowing it because it's the next doctor. It's like, and how do you get a new doctor? You regenerate, you get killed and you regenerate. The name kind of implied like, well, are we going to see what the next doctor looks like? Are we going to know what, you know, who's coming after David Tennant and everything? And then obviously that wasn't the case, but it was, but having that kind of foreshadowing to the end of time, ahead of time was very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And then that leads us right into the end of time. And the first part was on Christmas. This was Tennant's final run as a doctor, I guess, as a full-time doctor. He has appeared a couple times since then. But obviously the master's regenerated or been reborn or whatever. And he's a younger, more active master. And it's this total joker to David Tennant's Batman, I guess you could say. We've referenced that several times since then. But we get Donna's grandfather, who is what was his name?
Wilf.
That's what it. Wilf. Fun character. That's maybe the one character that I miss more than anybody else. More than Donna is Wilf. I think he was awesome. Wilf was great. And
Wilf is amazing, but Donna is on another level. Let's not get carried away.
Can we agree that Donna's family maybe trumps every other Doctor Who family that we've come across?
I would agree with that. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
Wilf. Wilf was great. Just kind of was there for whatever the Doctor needed him to do. The end of time. And this is a divisive two-parter, I guess you could say, because this was the kind of brought back the Time Lords. And whether you like this iteration of the Master or not is really up to everyone else's own opinion. I like this version of the Master, a little more maniacal than in years past, but it was definitely a sad Christmas. And I think the actual finale where the Doctor is going, you know, saying his goodbyes to everybody in his own little way, was tough. Tennant was a lot of people's first doctor. It was my first doctor, I guess. Even though I watched Eccleston, Tennant was my doctor for the longest time, although Capaldi is nipping at those heels right there. And it was sad, I think, just from that standpoint. We're saying goodbye to potentially one of the best doctors of all time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think that overall this episode is, I mean, it's ridiculous in a lot of ways. There's a lot of really dumb stuff here. The doctor, or the master rather, his weird Iron Man repulsor hand flying mm-hmm. and his meat and everything like that. They like kind of, they goof around with him in a couple of ways that are just a little too silly for me to take him seriously, especially after like the maniacal Lex Luthor. You know, we talk about the Batman Joker thing, but he's like the plans within plans within plans, kind of installing himself as the prime minister and everything like that in season 3, and you know, going out on that note, it's so cool. Except for the finale, where of course, yeah, like the Doctor Tinkerbells his way out of a situation. Like, I do believe in the Doctor, that all that nonsense, but the Master was never the problem with that. And in the end of time, the Master is not the strongest part, at least in the first half, which definitely reconciles itself in the second half of the story, mm-hmm. where you know, Rassilon shows up and the Time Lords, and we get all of this stuff. We build up the like idea of the Time Lords having turned evil during the Time War and stuff like that. There's so much information in this episode.
Oh yeah. Oh god, yeah.
And of course, like, David Tennant's exit is perfect. Like, angry about having to go and everything like that, wanting to stay. Like, it's his personal message to the fans about like what he is and who he and how he felt about his role on Doctor Who. The same way that all the Doctors get to have that sort of last moment to say goodbye. And his moment is that, like, this is, you know, this is the most fun I've ever had. I don't want to go, you know. And but yet he does it because there's a single person left to save, an old man who, you know, even the Doctor says, like, you probably don't even have that many years left in you anyway. Like, who right. cares? Even Wilf is like telling him, no, don't save me. And yet he does it, and he dies, and he goes back, and he gets says goodbye to everyone who's important in his life. And it's such a great moment for David Tennant, such a perfect moment for him, and he gets to go out on that.
Yeah.
And yeah, like we also had Timothy Dalton entering
right?
entering the Hooniverse as Rassilon and everything like that, and he's just chewing scenery like nobody's business with the glove, the Risen Mitten or whatever they called it on mm-hmm. Torchwood.
And, oh, right. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's. Yeah, it's just that like the second half goes a long way towards like making a lot of this stuff kind of like a lot of the goofier stuff. Everybody, President Obama turning into the Master and all that goofy stuff.
Yeah,
gets dropped at the end of the at the end of the first episode and fixed in episode 2, mm-hmm. and we go out on probably one of the strongest final regeneration scenes of any character of any Time Lord. So
it was emotional. That was an emotional regeneration for fans.
Yes,
of Tennant, because, you know, I don't want to say I was in tears, but I very easily could have been, because this is the guy
certainly
that
was.
He was in, you know, I definitely got emotional, choked up, however you want to say it. I was potentially shaking a little bit afterwards, just because I binged this on Netflix. So I went through the entire run of Tennant in the span of about 2 weeks or so. And really was tied into him. You know, I really felt like this was my guy. This was my doctor. Maybe it was like 3 weeks. This is my doctor. I really got to know him. I knew the ins and outs of his character, of what drives him. And this now we're kind of forced to say goodbye. And here appears Matt Smith, who's kind of a totally different, geekier guy.
When Matt Smith first showed up at the end of that episode, like hearing the Geronimo and hearing and seeing his like little tiny pale little boy face and everything like that. And everything, like, I was not excited for the next season. I was ridiculously off put at the end. And of course it all turned out for the best. Like, Matt Smith was incredible too. And over time became, you know, again, one of the better doctors of the entire run. But Yeah, like, such a strange way to go out on that. Like, at the time, you know, I was a very different person at the time with very different opinions and stuff like that. And I was much more Marcus-like, you might say. And, like, I was like, oh, they brought in a young kid. Like, this is going to suck. This is going to be terrible. Like, oh, everybody's going to – like, everybody just wants a young guy and everything like that. Right. And we're not going to get a – you know, we're not going to have somebody of, like, an average age or whatever. And, you know, it was a ridiculous problem to have at the time. But after you had just exited on David Tennant, I don't think you could have put anybody on that screen. You could have put John Hurt on that screen and promised me 4 seasons of John Hurt, and I probably would have been like, it's not David Tennant. It's no good.
Exactly, yeah. Damn it, I wanted more Tennant. Mm-hmm. It's like you're saying goodbye to a friend. Everybody's graduating from college, and you have to say goodbye.
Absolutely.
And maybe you'll keep up once in a while. But
you won't.
So. Yeah, you won't. You'll see them on Facebook years down the line and, mm-hmm. and wonder why they gained so much weight.
Yeah, you saw you'll see him on Jessica Jones and wonder, man, what the hell has he been up to? Yeah, what? Yeah. How did he become? Like, he became a real asshole, didn't he? Weird.
He's done a lot of TV shows and films and now Netflix. Yeah. So he did Broadchurch. He did the American version of Broadchurch. He did.
He was in Fright Night. The Fright Night,
and he's
actually
been
quite light.
Yeah, he's been all over the place. So good on Tennant. Looking forward to seeing more from him. Anyways, on to the next one. The first Matt Smith. We're at the second half, by the way, of our Christmas specials here. A Christmas.
Well, less and less to say about each
one.
Yeah,
exactly. A Christmas Carol. So this was Matt Smith's first Christmas as the lead, and it's the Doctor. It says. Doctor must save the soul of a lonely old miser. Whatever. This is set in the future with a fog over London or wherever it is, with fish and sharks floating above the fog. And I guess this family, this old miser, and I totally forget his name, controls the weather. It's like it's a weather manipulator. Controls the fog.
They have a weather dominator.
A weather dominator. Yep. Controls the fog to let the fish in once a year so that they could... usually like on Christmas Eve, so they can get the fish and the bacon, whatever. Anyway, so
yeah, it's not well explained, or like, and it's such a, that is like probably the weirdest concept for a Doctor Who episode that they have ever, like a Doctor, especially a Christmas special. The mm-hmm. whole fish thing, to this day, I do not understand the importance of the fish or why anybody would write that.
No idea, and why that has never come up again.
It's such a weird thing.
It's a Moffatism. Yeah, totally. But, yeah, so, and the interesting thing about this one is it has a unique format, right? So it starts off with the Doctor meeting this old miser, I guess we'll call him. And
This Scrooge,
essentially. And trying to find out why this guy is such a Scrooge. Well, he, you know, Mr. Scrooge goes to bed or one night and then all of a sudden awakens. And the Doctor's standing there with a projector. Projecting scenes of Mr. Scrooge as a child and trying to find out why.
This is your life.
Yeah, basically this is your life, and it's you know, video recordings of the kid, his younger self. They're watching, trying to find out. Oh, his dad was mean to him, so therefore he's gonna be mean to his progeny and the people.
That's
around.
How it works.
Yeah, that's how it totally works. Mm-hmm. The Doctor says, "Hold on a second, I'll be right back." Disappears in the TARDIS and appears on screen. In the video, and
back
in time. So this video takes this episode kind of takes place as the current old miser. The current Scrooge is watching himself as a young kid with the Doctor jumping in, back and forth, and kind of helping tell the story. And then they go forward every little so often when they meet this this singer. Right, she's this frozen. I don't really know what her role was.
So I think we can kind of just say, like, this episode has so much potential. There's so much interesting ideas to be played with. There's so many interesting ideas here to be played with, the idea of, like, Matt Smith acting as ghosts of past, present, and future for a Scrooge-like character and stuff like that, and, like, wanting to have fun with that idea and stuff like that. But the episode is so bogged down by, like, with all these different weird concepts and stuff like that, that just don't really work. That don't really have any kind of bearing on the story. Like every once in a while, they just throw in an idea and it's just there. And I feel like have this episode takes place in like one room as well. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. There's, It's probably, in my opinion, the weakest of all the Christmas specials. I don't think any one of them being quite less memorable than this one.
Mm-hmm. What was interesting about this one was that the Scrooge, or his name is Kazran, by the way, Kazran.
Okay, sure.
Isn't
he played by like Dumbledore or something, or was that later?
I don't know. Maybe it's later. He falls in love with Abigail. The name of the girl is Abigail. It's the frozen girl, her icebox, suspended animation. They visit her every year, every few years on Christmas. He's getting older as a child. She's staying the same, obviously. She only comes out on Christmas.
She's dying, right?
It could be because she's dying, exactly. And so, but she has this incredible voice. I don't know. I forget who the actress was that played it. She was an actual, whatever. He falls in love with Abigail, and the story kind of takes place with his relationship with Abigail, and you come to find out that he became this. The reason he still keeps her around and kind of keeps her as his centerpiece is because of this kind of bond he has with her. Even to the point where Abigail invites him for Christmas dinner one year, and he ends up things kind of go haywire. So it was an interesting episode. It definitely was a Christmas Carol. But I liked it. I rewatching it. This is when I think I saw it on Thursday or Friday. Don't quote me on it. But I like the episode from the standpoint of, it's a different take on the Christmas Carol. I liked Abigail's character. I liked the Scrooge guy, but I like the whole idea of, this is your life, and being able to hop back and forth. And there's one scene where the doctor appears on the screen and Kazran says something to the effect of, wait, I don't remember that happening. Wait a minute. I do remember it happening. It's because the doctor's playing it out. Yeah.
That's a super interesting, cool idea. Like the doctor going back in time and altering this guy's experience and memories to make him less bitter and stuff like that is definitely super cool.
Yeah.
I just don't think it goes necessarily as deep as we want it. Sure. You would want it to, or as interesting as you would want it to. And I don't know. It doesn't like this episode. I don't think it's necessarily awful or anything like that. I just don't think it comes together quite as well as any of the other Christmas specials.
Sure.
So it becomes my least favorite overall. No, that's not true actually. No. Because we're going to get to the most recent Christmas special at some point, and that's the worst one by far.
Well, the next one is The Doctor, the Widow, and the Wardrobe.
Yeah.
Which I think that might be my least favorite.
Pretty low on the list. Yeah.
Yeah. Only because it does kind of jump all over the place, and this is also another kind of time trotting episode. So it's here's a synopsis: Madge Arwell and her two children journey into a magical wintry world. Okay, that tells me nothing. Really, what happens is that Madge's husband disappears in World War II, and I guess fakes his death or whatever it was.
It's Chronicles of Narnia.
It's Chronicles of Narnia.
It's Narnia. Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, except instead of finding a magical world on the other side, they find like loggers.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it. Exactly it. There's some World War II stuff going on there. This one didn't grab me. This did not grab me. It was trying to be something that's not necessarily Christmassy.
Again, it kind of ties back into the weird connection between Santa Claus and Jesus Christ and all that stuff I find it often in British fiction, and Chronicles of Narnia being very heavily Christian influenced and Christian focused and stuff like that ties back again to Christmas and everything like that, which I guess if you want to get technical, Christmas is technically a Christian holiday or whatever, but it just seems so strange to me as somebody who has never really necessarily associated it with anything Christian. And I think the world at large has mostly kind of just accepted it, the winter holiday, as a thing that exists independent of that. I'm sure there are people out there who disagree and people who don't feel that way. But a lot of them have jobs at Fox News. But for the most part, I think it's just such its own entity at this point that it's, to me personally, it's always seemed strange because it was just never something that I necessarily connected to when I was a kid, or I never connected those two things. But here it's it's even less connected here. But there's the very bare bones connection of the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe thing. But then all of the things that happen in the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe post the first chapter are completely, you know, supplanted by this weird story of loggers versus living tree, like sentient trees that are creating a king, I guess. And yeah, their plan is to like make a tree king to fight the loggers who are like, aren't they dumping some weird chemicals or something?
Something. Oh, God.
They're vaguely menacing. They're vaguely like evil and what, or not necessarily evil, but like negligent or something like that. And they're about to get attacked by a tree that never really does anything. If I remember the episode correctly too, like they go to like the big still tree king and everything like that. But then like nothing ever actually happens with that. Like the tree never comes to life and kills them or anything.
Right.
Or maybe it does, and I'm just remembering totally wrong. But yeah, again, probably another low rung episode. You even saying like, yeah, not great.
Up next, the snowmen. So I have to say one thing. I'm more and more surprised at how many Christmas specials that both Tennant and Smith led. They were leads on.
Yeah.
Because Smith only had 3 full years as Doctor Who, yet he was in 5 Christmas specials. Crazy. He led 4 of them. He was in 5 of them, you know, 5 continuous years. So, and same with Tennant. So really interesting stuff. Anyway, so the snowmen, this was the first, well, not the first, but we see Clara really as the Doctor's companion the first time in this, right?
Yeah, it's the first time that she's out running around with him as opposed to just like providing like Oracle support, like Batman, Barbara Gordon.
And these were terrifying snowmen. So, this was the Great Intelligence, correct?
Yeah, something like that. The Great Intelligence, I think in the original Doctor Who episode that he shows up in, like they literally refer to him as like Yogg-Sothoth or Shoddigaroth or one of those Lovecraft villains, you know. He's some kind of weird consciousness, like bodiless consciousness that is evil.
Yep. This is the whole idea that there's the sentient snowman, and it takes place in the, I think it was late 1890s. This is also the first time we see, is the Paternoster crew are in this one?
Yes, they are. This is the first time we get to see them.
Which was great.
Yeah, which is fantastic. They are amazing, and I am bummed that we have not seen them in a while.
They were in last season, one or two episodes at the very beginning of last season.
Yep, they were in Capaldi's regeneration episode.
I really do hope they come back, but I like the snowman. I thought it was these kind of terrifying snowmen and this poor little, I think there's one scene where the poor little kid's talking to them or they're chasing after him or something. The Doctor had his, he's just post Amy and Rory, so he's kind of gone into his personal seclusion. He's upset and he's angry and he's got his TARDIS kind of up in a, it's almost like a treehouse. I mean, essentially, he's got the TARDIS all the way up in the clouds.
Yeah, he's got his little like no girls allowed fort thing that he's TARDIS into, and he's the little rascal. Yeah,
Matt Smith, you little rascal. Clara finds a ladder and makes her way up and basically walks up to nothing except for a door, I think it was at the very top. You get the Great Intelligence. You had a bunch of other stuff that was in this. Again, a very classic episode from a standpoint of how it was all paced out in Doctor Who. But I loved it. It's a really good episode. It's Clara, the first time we fully have Clara, the Paternoster. What are they called again? The Paternoster or whatever. I don't know.
The Paternoster crew, I think. They
maybe
might
it have is.
Just,
oh, is, okay.
Is that, or is that what we just called them all the time?
Maybe this is what possibly we just called them. The snowman, Great Intelligence. I love the 1800s. London is one of my favorite time frames for that town, for that city. It's beautiful. The snow falling, the imagery was gorgeous. And you get a lot of great, great feelings in this episode with the, you know, there's that. It's almost like this is the one with the ghost story, right? Where they had the lady who had passed away or something in the frozen lake. I'm drawing a blank. I haven't watched this one yet.
He's like a lot of old men becoming bitter over time.
Yeah.
His nanny fell into the lake, or the lake and drowned, I want to say.
Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah. So,
or not lake, but the pond.
The pond behind their house. The Amy Pond. Ooh.
Nope. We're done with that.
We're done with that. But yeah, I really enjoyed the snowman. I thought it was a really fun episode. And it's the first time with Clara. And I know we were kind of iffy when we first saw it, but rewatching it now and knowing everything that we know about Clara and how Matt Smith's kind of what he was going through as the doctor at the time, just losing his, you know, probably two of his closest companions. I felt, I really enjoyed this episode.
Yeah. I know Marcus, or maybe it was Susan, Marcus or Susan does not love this episode. Maybe both of them, but I think it's fine. You know, we get to see Clara in action for the first time. So we're building her up and building her up. You know, first we see her in a single room, which turns out to be a Dalek. In the previous season, and then we see her again here out and about running around, and she dies again, and this, you know, but we are building up to Clara as a very important character in the fiction and everything. Yes. Like that, much the same way that we kind of did with Donna and building up her story over time. And you know, you can say one thing or the other about where Donna or where Clara eventually went with all that stuff, but it was still that was what they were doing, and it was cool.
Mm-hmm.
And we got the Paternoster crew, which is like the some of the best side characters, some of the best supporting characters we've ever had on Doctor Who. So like, yeah, overall the episode is pretty strong just on the power of its characters for me.
Yeah.
The overall plot with the snowmen themselves, the snowmen are goofy and they're the worst kind of Doctor Who villain, in my opinion, which is to say that they are villains. They're just soulless drones, soulless automatons, like scarecrows in David Tennant's third season, or like the Christmas Angels. And the Christmas Angels have a little bit more going on because they're scary to look at. But like, Doctor Who loves those weird, mindless drone enemies that that always just circle the Doctor and have no personality. And I hate them so much.
Uh-huh.
Because they don't give the Doctor anything to bounce off of. They're there specifically to scare children and stuff like that. And not really to do anything useful or interesting plot wise. And as a result, if they feel forced and unnecessary in so many episodes, you think back on like the Smilers from another one, like we came up with this like interesting visual look for these characters and do jack shit with them. And it's more or less the same with the snowmen.
Yep. Very true. I missed those snowmen. They should bring them back. They won't.
Miss them. They should not bring them back.
Up next is the last Matt Smith episode, which was last Christmas. The Time of the Doctor.
The Time of the Doctor, yeah. Okay, there you go.
Which was still Matt Smith's last episode, yeah, The Time of the Doctor. I do have to say, though, what's kind of interesting is that Matt Smith had some episodes where they were really kind of sad, right? The Christmas Carol dealt with loss, right? Yeah, the Doctor, the Widow, and the Wardrobe dealt with loss. The Snowman, he was just coming off of the loss of Amy Pond. And I have the Time of the Doctor, where he's trying to delay his death by aging. How many hundreds of years had he aged? And actually aged. But yeah, it's got the... essentially, Matt Smith is in Christmas Town, I think this was the name of it, or the town called Christmas.
Yeah, it's Town Called Christmas, yeah.
Yeah, Town Called Christmas. And
stretching like our tenuous connection to what makes it a Christmas special. It's just like, what makes this episode Christmassy? We literally named the town Christmas. Oh, okay. Anything else? No.
No, exactly. Nope.
There's nothing else Christmas related in this. We had to find something to do to make it Christmas related. So we just named the thing Christmas.
It Christmas. I'm trying to figure out the best way to say it. I mean, it was Matt Smith's last episode, but I didn't love it.
It's not a great episode overall.
It's not. There's so many things that this is where continuity within an episode and blatantly being able to see when something is going wrong that could be fixed with just a few, you know, a few bits of explanation would help. I did love the bodiless Cyberman head. What was his name again?
Handles is amazing.
Yeah, Handles. oh god, another character that just appears in one episode, but you love him.
It's great. Another great supporting character, like that they do a lot of interesting stuff with on that episode. Like they even make you care about Handel's death, which is at the very
exactly.
end.
It's the Wilson of.
Well, it's in this case, it's more like the indicator of it's like the last straw for the Doctor. It's like he's delaying and delaying and delaying and delaying, and then Handel's fucking dies, and Handel's is like his little. It's like even my fucking phone, you know, like my iPhone, my Cyberman iPhone just died in my hand. I have nothing left.
I'm gonna call my iPhone Handles from now on.
Yes, there you go. You buy it a cover with two Cybermen style handles on the sides. But I literally like the one like little shred of sanity that I was keeping for myself. Yep. This fucking thing that I had like charged up and put like put a little bit of a personality into, but it really is just this kind of mindless robot thing. That's gone now. Yeah. I can't keep denying I can't stay in denial any longer. And so he turns around and he accepts his fate, but even then kind of rages against the darkness and gets the new regenerations from the Time Lords on their behalf and everything, and fights his way out. Mm-hmm. It's a very strong ending. It's got a very strong side character, but the episode overall, like, it just jumps around so goddamn much. It's just like we needed to pack this like huge story into one episode. Mm-hmm. So, you know,
they had to tie all those loose threads that they had floating around, everything from like
the regeneration limit,
the silence, the cracks in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost so like it was too much stuff they tried to resolve, and they didn't even do a great job of resolving
all. No, they break out more of the goofy ass Cybermen, like the wooden Cyberman, and the angels in the snow that just apparently can't get him from that point. They bring in all this stuff, and then they resolve it without you ever seeing anything interesting happen with it. Like they resolve it by running away from the problem and saying, and then 20 years passed.
Right,
it's a bad way to write an episode. There's no rising and falling action. It's just constantly rising action, and then like there's no fall. You're just suddenly back at where you were before the rising action.
Mm-hmm. And we're told. I mean, we're told that he's aging because he's reached his regeneration limit. And this, I think, this was the part. I mean, they tried to tie so many things together with that. Remember the crack that Clara goes into the crack and asks. Apparently, the Time Lords are in there. Ask them to grant the Doctor, more regeneration so that he could survive this. And we think it's not going to happen. All of a sudden, the crack appears above the town called Christmas, and all the regeneration energy flows out and into the Doctor, and he becomes Capaldi.
Right, And he fights him off, and that's kind of the end of the episode. If I'm not mistaken, this was also the same year that An Adventure in Time and Space came out.
All of this was... Yeah, you had Adventure Time in Space, you had the 50th anniversary, and then you had this.
So, like, I remember...
It's the weakest of the three.
Absolutely. But what I remember most about this episode is just thinking, like, man, An Adventure in Time and Space is such a better... such a better story. Such a better goodbye to, not to necessarily Matt Smith's Doctor, but to a Doctor in the case of William Hartnell. Like, here's the story of... the rise and fall of William Hartnell as the Doctor. And it's such a good, touching, heartwarming story, and kind of tragic in its own way.
Yeah, exactly. And what's also, looking back now, what I find interesting, and I might have to rewatch Adventure in Space, maybe?
Whatever.
I'm going to have to rewatch it because remember at the very end of that special, Hartnell's Doctor essentially meets Matt Smith's Doctor.
Right? He sees Matt Smith in the TARDIS. And he's like, oh, it's all going to be okay.
And then, he kind of hallucinates, sees Matt Smith, it's all going to be okay. And then at the end of Time of the Doctor, Matt Smith hallucinates and sees Amy Pond, says, okay, it's going to be all okay. So they kind of pulled the same thing twice, but whatever.
I like the continuity there. I like the connection between the two.
I'm glad they at least tried tying up all those loose ends, because Moffat is generally really bad at that kind of stuff, and usually it never makes sense. So,
well, I mean, it makes sense here. It's just poorly constructed.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. At least it makes sense here. It's just it wasn't constructed super well. Not a great episode. I guess it passes as a Christmas episode because it does take place in the only option they have left for Christmas. Or so we thought, because the very next episode is Santa with The Last Christmas and
do we even need to say this? Do we even need to talk about this one? Like, can we just be done? Can we just end the podcast now and pretend that this episode never happened?
All right. Here are my thoughts about Last Christmas. It could have been really cool. It's Inception, right? It's Inception with Santa Claus.
And it's Inception, but also The Thing, but also Alien.
Yeah, exactly. It's all those things at once. And it's just not done well. It's not. I think it's a bummer that these last two Doctor Who Christmas specials weren't very great. And then Last Christmas wasn't.
It's the worst of the bunch.
You know? It had so much potential. And I keep looking back. I'm like, oh, God, you know, all these ideas. If I didn't watch the episode, you told me, like, just bullet points of what was happening, I'd say, holy fuck, this sounds like an awesome Christmas episode. You know, you have Santa Claus coming in, like, guns a-blazing to rescue people. You have Inception. You have...
You're giving that particular element more credit than it deserves,
But you know what I'm saying is, like, oh, if you had bullet pointed this, I would have been like, oh, God, that sounds really cool. And then it actually happens, and you're like, oh, God, that was not executed remotely well.
That's
and
it's weird.
Such a bummer of an episode, man. It's
over the top and ridiculous. Yeah. And also, we needed to stretch this episode. Like, we have a concept that which is that there's a twist at the end, but we still have 20 minutes of episode left to do. So what if we just tell the same twist three more times?
Yeah. Oh my God. Right.
Holy shit! This episode.
At least Inception did a different time zone, different place each time. But yeah, not a great episode, and there isn't much to talk about. I haven't watched this since last year. I will probably watch it just to maybe go through it again, because anything will be better than that from a Christian standpoint. But I think overall, except for maybe these last two, the Christmas episodes have been pretty good. There's a good consistency. I had thought. And again, because I've been tainted by these last two, I thought that the Christmas episodes were just mediocre at best. But they've been pretty good to really good and really enjoyable. So,
it's been diminishing returns. Yes. Over time, they've gotten worse and worse.
Definitely, definitely. 10 years down the line, we're going to look back at this episode and say, wow, that last Christmas was actually pretty good when you think about it.
No, in comparison to the garbage we in got right after. Oh, my God.
In comparison to, yeah.
I have high hopes.
We have a goddamn ginger doctor now. What the hell happened?
Everybody's so mad. There you go. Those are the Christmas episodes.
Those are Christmases. So I've asked the team to rate kind of give me their top three episodes, and I'm gonna go through our list, and then I'll go through what our amazing readers have told us. So I'm gonna go in with mine. I mentioned it earlier. I love The Next Doctor. I think that's maybe my favorite of the Christmas specials. It's not necessarily Christmassy. It's just that it's it had a lot of fun going on with it, and the character David Morrissey's, you know, the false doctor is really cool. I'm actually going to throw the snowmen in there because I love that was full on winter, and maybe it's me being nostalgia for snow. Cause we haven't had a lick of snow this year because of that damned El Nino, everything. It's like 60 degrees out and raining and this is not December weather to me. So the snowmen is totally Christmas to me. And I'm that might be my second favorite episode. And then Runaway Bride. I love the Runaway Bride. Just rewatched that one today. Thought it was a blast, and the way they positioned Donna Noble after that was great. And yeah, just that's the fun classic Russell T. Davies episode. Let me go through Marcus's and Sean's, and I'll get to yours. You can kind of tell me yours, Stephen. So Marcus says that he likes all three of or all of Russell T. Davies, but the first three especially. So. You know, that's obviously the Christmas Invasion is his favorite. Voyage of the Damned is his favorite, then Runaway Bride, then Christmas Invasion. He really liked all three of those and felt that they were good, great episodes. So they're not bad at all looking back. Not even as much as we hated Rose, they were all pretty good episodes.
I mean, we don't speak for everybody. Like, Marcus hates Rose. I do not hate Rose by any stretch of the imagination.
I dislike Rose. Anyways, whatever. It's neither here nor there. Sean... his top three were, and he says these are all basically interchangeable. Next Doctor, Runaway Bride, Christmas Invasion. He said he could interchange all those. And Steve, what were your, I guess, top three?
I mean, you can almost say the exact same thing for me as Marcus. The first three are pretty fantastic, but I would probably remove Voyage of the Damned just to replace it with The End of Time.
Okay.
And
oh, you like The End of Time. Okay, good.
Yeah, I do like The End of Time. I don't like The End of Time as a whole, but I think the second part and the thing, you know, what it set up for, you know, later on is really, really good. Like the, but more importantly, it's the end of an era with David Tennant, like the best goodbye of any Doctor that we've had such, you know, thus far. I love that. Now I love David Tennant, obviously, and I loved the 10th Doctor, or the rather the 10th Doctor. And seeing him go left such a mark on my Doctor Who viewing experience and set up everything else that came after it that I got to throw that one in there.
I don't know if I'm looking for – maybe I am looking for a cheery Christmassy episode. It's kind of been a downer. Yeah.
All life is suffering.
All life is suffering. So I need to, hopefully this episode upcoming, the Husbands of River Song, is a lot more – cheery, and it does seem to break away from that whole Christmas vibe, right? Because you've had let's see, Christmas Carol, Doctor Widow in the Wardrobe, The Snowman, The Time of the Doctor with Christmas Town, Last Christmas. All these have been like super heavy Christmas themes,
or at least trying to pretend that they are.
Yeah, so I'm interested to see how Runaway Bride tackles that. So let's get into our wonderful listeners, and I've asked them all to tell me what their favorites are. Jacob Christus, who at Jacob Christus, that's Christus with a K, writes, David Tennant's first episode. He has it all caps. I don't know. He said, fucking devastated after watching that. Annalie, our good friend Annalie Sorensen at Sublevel 28 writes, it's a tie between The Snowman, good choice, and Last Christmas, bad choice. Sorry, Annalie. Just kidding. You're totally open to your own opinion, even if it's wrong. Post-modern. Can I say that, Stephen, or is that horrible of me to say?
Which one, sorry?
She said, I said, it's you're open to your own opinion, but it's wrong. She liked The Snowman and Last Christmas.
You're open to your own opinion, but like, obviously nobody is wrong in what they want.
We're just messing.
We're like your friendly, like, brothers. Your friendly older and or younger brothers who like to...
You've listened to us every week argue about why we do or don't like Doctor Who, and I'm sure we agree with 50% of you 50% of the time.
We're here to poke you in the back and say, like, and make fun of your hairstyle. That's what we do.
Exactly.
The Lonely TARDIS.
Postmodern Dad, or at PPM Dad, writes, I think A Christmas Carol, because it is very Christmassy, and it is there, and it is before number 11 gets too goofy. That's also very correct. James Flatley, or at Metalfish 23, it's Fish FYSH 23, writes, mine is either The Next Doctor, because I love David Morrissey, or The Doctor, The Widow, and The Wardrobe. That's the first one I've really been hearing about, The Doctor, Widow, and The Wardrobe from other folks. But I mean, I can see why each of these are, people would like any of these, right? They're all written well. It's just some of them get to me in ways that others don't.
If Marcus and Sean were here, maybe they would give us good reasons why we're totally incorrect about these episodes being not like being the least good of all of them. Although I think as a general consensus, we can all agree that last year's was the worst.
Yes.
Like all sorry, of you on Twitter. Anybody, I'm sorry.
Chris Newnham at Cynical Antipode writes, wow, he changes, by the way, changes Twitter name, handle. He says, The Time of the Doctor. It had handles. Yes, handles. We love handles. The Key and the Quiff. Cooking a Turkey in the TARDIS. And one of Matt's best speeches. It was a really good speech. It says, the Doctor was fighting some of his greatest enemies, but he refused to leave for hundreds of years, even if it meant death. On top of that, the devastatingly emotional final moments with the hallucination of Amy, the close-up of the falling bow tie. It gets me every time. Such a well-put-together episode. I did have to say that one thing that a few folks have actually mentioned to us was Time Crash, which took place right before Voyage of the Damned, and was the 10th Doctor meeting the 3rd Doctor.
Certainly wasn't John Pertwee. No,
no. I'm sorry. Peter Davis. Yeah. So it was interesting. Very well done. It's like a 4 minute, 4 or 5 minute short, but worth checking out.
I wish they did more of those little shorts, but there have been some good ones.
They stopped doing those. They did them for a while and they stopped doing those.
I would love to see, this is complete tangent, but we had Paul McGann return in one of those little shorts. And just as we've said this before, but just as another aside, like, let's get Paul McGann back in there because he has put in his dues. Like the miniseries Be Damned, yep. TV movie Be Damned. He is now a part of the Doctor Who fiction. Like, let's just get him in an episode.
Like, in a great way. I love the audiobooks that he's been in. They're fun. They're terrific.
Yeah, that Big Finish stuff that we listened to were great.
It's a bummer that they didn't, get him. Anyway, so that's it for this episode. We spoke for over an hour, surprisingly. I don't know how. I said it was going to be a short episode. It was not a short episode. There have been a lot of Christmas specials. So maybe next year we'll have to break it up into threes, we'll watch three Christmas episodes and come back to them. Although who knows what the actual TV schedule is going to be like next year. If it's going to walk right up to the Christmas special again, we don't know. We've only had 1 week off of Doctor Who. So that's it. Again, sorry that Sean couldn't be here. He's traveling obviously with the holiday in tow. Maybe next year we'll record earlier, but whatever. Marcus with his network issues, but at least we were able to get comments from both of them. We're going to have the Christmas episode special next week. I'll figure out a time that we're all available and we'll record it. Let us know your thoughts on anything that we said. Tweet at us at Lonely TARDIS. You can tweet us individually. I'm at Dolly Domofsky. Marcus is at Annoyed Gamer. Sean is at Sean Norton. Steven, you are?
S-T-E-V-E-N-S-T. Oh, God, I don't even know how to spell my own name out now. S-T-E-V-E-N-S-C-R-O-M on Twitter. You can find me on IGN. You can find me on Dorkly. And you can find me at Ars Technica. Sometimes PC cool. Gamer.
You're all over the place.
I'm all over the place. I don't really have much choice.
We're proud of you.
I got to make that money. I got to make that paper move.
You got to pay for that Hulu subscription.
Exactly. Man, Marvel Unlimited does not pay for itself,
that
guys.
That is correct.
Support my
somebody get Steven a subscription of Marvel Unlimited for Christmas. I'm just letting you
know. I already have a subscription to Marvel Unlimited, but if anybody wants to get me like an extension on Marvel Unlimited, that'd be amazing. I don't actually have a Patreon either.
Visit us at lonelytardis.com. Rate and review us on iTunes, on Stitcher, and any other place that we are popping up. And hopefully I'll have a list of some of the new places that we've been submitted to over the last couple months on the post. And we'll see you guys next week after the Christmas episode, The Husbands of River Song.
Yeah, I guess those are just coming right around the corner.
It's a couple days away. It's Christmas.
We'll see when I'll let you know when I'm actually back here from holidays and stuff and when we can actually record.
So. Right. I know last year took us, I think, end of January to record the Christmas episode.
That sounds about right. I mentioned that only so that the listeners know, like, if we take a break, yo, it's Christmas.
Get off our backs. If they did an Easter episode, that would work a lot easier.
Write to Stephen Moffat and tell him that Easter is a much better holiday than Christmas. You don't have to mean it. You just say it and tell him that, and then he will think it's the truth. And and then he will not give a shit one way or the other because Moffat does what Moffat wants to do.
Yep. Steven@Moffat.com. There you go. With that, we'll see you guys on the next time. We'll see you guys next time.
We will see you guys on the next time when the Doctors Who
with
have
faces on the Lonely TARDIS. Adios.
Bye.
I should have had us singing like Christmas carols while we're
at. Like jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way.
Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh.
In a TARDIS open sleigh.
In a TARDIS open sleigh.
We'll workshop that.